everybody, and welcome to episode number 14 of Girl Fight. We are thrilled today to have a very special guest, Ms. Lucy Bradshaw from Maxis. Like I said in the previous episode, if you don't know who Maxis is, you should just be slapped. Lucy has been in the industry for more than 20 years.
That is right.
Yeah. And she has worked on many, many titles, the most famous of which being the SimCity series, The Sims, and Spore, all best-selling PC titles. Is The Sims still the best-selling PC title
of Sims all time? Has still got that category, and definitely, yeah. You know, with what they're doing with Sims 3 and expanding it out to the console and everything, it's, you know, I think it's going to have a whole new audience now, so we'll see what happens there.
All righty, cool. So we'll have some specific questions for Lucy here in a little bit. First off, I want to give some fan art shout-outs now that the craziness of E3 is done. I actually got to go through the email and print out all of our fan art. So Richard Palmer, Chris Norris, Justin Yasuda, Pascal Santos, Matthew Menji, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, Jason Doss, and John Dorian. Thanks, you guys.
We are now dominating this wall.
Yeah,
it's,
I think,
pretty great.
we're beating Beyond now. So
yeah, and not only that, but the quality of our artwork is amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So,
and
thanks,
lots
guys.
Of pictures of me with horses
and guns,
and horses and guns, and poor animals being knocked to ground. I'd like to say my favorite is the Alistair fragrance, the official fragrance of IGN Girl Fight. That made me so happy.
So, thanks, guys. And if you've got fan art, keep sending it. We'll keep putting it up on our wall
until we run out of room.
Exactly,
and then we'll just replace some of the bad ones.
Yeah.
Or there you go.
From other podcasts,
because we don't have any bad ones. All of ours are spectacular.
Yeah. Alrighty, cool. So let's start things off like we always do with what we're playing. Christine, you go first.
I was
going to
let the guests go first.
Oh, well, we can.
Well, most recently, let's see, I've been playing Death Spanx, Ron Gilbert's game up
on
SBL.
Yeah, I reviewed that
game. It's a blast.
It's great.
Yeah, cool. Christine?
I started World of Warcraft last night.
Ooh.
Is this the first time you've played it?
It is.
Well, that's a shocker.
Yeah.
So I started off as a Blood Elf Warlock. I made her very pretty. And yeah, I've just been sort of running around. I'm only level 7.
Yeah.
At this point, so still very much secluded in my starting zone. And it was funny because zooming out on the map, I was like, "Holy crap, this game is huge."
Yeah. It's been around for a little while.
I know.
When 9 million people are playing.
Download, from when I installed the game, I was like, another patch. I was like, oh my God, I know this game's been out for a while, but it took hours just to get everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Up and working. But it was, however, a lot of fun.
Cool.
So,
awesome. Yeah. How about you, Megan?
It's an odd combination of Red Dead Redemption and Dragon Quest IX. So I'll be playing this really violent game, and then I'll be this little kitty game, like, do-do-do-do-do, and then bam, bam, bam. So it's pretty funny. And that Red Dead Redemption is so popular with my family. My sister is up from Santa Barbara for the week, and she's has the Xbox version, and she's like, can I borrow your PS3 version? Is like, they can't convert or anything. You can't just sit down. She's like, I don't care. Just bring your PlayStation 3 down to the main living room.
You can just bring
and
it
hook
with
it
you.
Up. Yeah. So it was kind of funny. So I'm like fighting to get my game back. Like, come on.
Well, they did a great job on that game.
They
the
did.
Horseback riding alone was worth it.
Yeah. just riding around the West and, you know.
I hear you have a problem with animals.
Oh. No, the problem was it was like one of the first missions where you're just learning how to shoot and to take cover. And the horse, I left the horse back before we started, and then I went up and took cover behind a rock, and I was lining up a shot for the guy, and my horse came out of nowhere and ran right into the line.
Dude, accidentally shooting your horse is just a really bad way to kick a guy off.
I know. And then it died.
Yeah.
Headshot, you know.
But it has given us some.
At least it was, you know.
Fantastic fan art.
Shot,
yeah.
Not what I was going for.
Yeah.
I'm eyeing the Red Dead Steimer fan art and I'm just cracking up. Move your Evan horse.
Yeah. That was unexpected. Because that was the same guy that did the Alistair fragrance.
Okay.
And he said, you know, Steimer, you're up next. So I'm thinking, yes, I'm going to get a Caden fragrance. And instead, I'm shooting a horse, but that's fine. Yeah. And I'm a little.
But you look good doing
me?
It. It's, yeah, no. Say, so.
I'm like.
You'd be surprised what people can find on the internet.
I know. Now I'm like, shoot, I should go Google myself and see what comes up.
Yeah.
Horse lovers beware.
Yes. Yeah. For me, Nicole, I have been playing. I finished Alan Wake. Mm-hmm. Meh. hate to say it. I really, really wanted that game to be good. And it started off pretty good. But it just got really, really repetitive. It was just doing the same thing over and over and over again. Story fell apart at the end. And the art was just... Character animations are just really bad in that game, which is unfortunate. I think it had a lot of potential. But last night I downloaded Limbo and started playing that. And that is a ton of fun. Really? I am really, really liking it. Yeah, it's like it's all like environmental puzzles. So it's like so Tomb Raider or whatnot. Just take out all the combat stuff. And it's all just environmental puzzles and platforming type stuff.
And Man, you can just go all over the internet and find those kind of little puzzle games. Windowsill, awesome. You know, they always make some really fun, you know, kind of tricky ones to actually kind of figure out.
Right, yeah, Limbo's, I've already run into a few where I sat there for like 20 minutes trying to figure out how I was going to get past that part.
I know. Anybody playing Osmos?
No, I'm not.
No, but I've heard of
it. I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's actually, they've got it for the iPad and they've got a PC version. And
yeah, I just added that in the database, actually. It looked fun.
It is. It's one of those games that just is completely addictive. So you know, the better you get, the harder it gets. So you just keep thinking, okay, I'm just going to keep going a little bit farther.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, that's what we're playing. So we're going to jump right in and do questions with Lucy. I'm going to start off with a reader question because it's actually kind of fortuitous that we had this question asked. This comes to us from Stefan, and he says, you know, Maxis has done lots of simulation, sandbox type games. Would you ever be interested in doing a game with the story? Which is actually very funny. Because
how fortunate that question got asked. Yeah. You know, this week we were at a showcase. In fact, Nicole was over there, and we announced our new game, Darkspore.
Yeah.
Now, it has some inspiration technology from Spore itself, the creature editor, but we've really kind of adapted it to an action RPG game. It has a backstory in this, you know, sort of sci-fi world where you're really going to have to go out there and rid the galaxy of the invasion of Darkspore. So we've got fiction. It's really an action RPG game, born and bred. And the team that's been working on it, they play these games. I mean, they are PC gamers. They play action RPG. They're WoW, League of Legends, you name it, Torchlight, whatever it may be. And they just thought, what a great way to take the creature editor and map it to a game that's going to kind of work that system and bring something new to that whole genre. So I think we're finding a really fun and interesting balance with really working on that gameplay, making sure it's got that co-op play from bottom up.
Yeah.
But also kind of taking that whole Spore galaxy and putting a sci-fi story and backdrop in it and giving you sort of this momentum and purpose to go in and really just play an action game that's, you know, a lot of fun to
play. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I saw it at the showcase the other day and I thought it looked really cool. At first when I walked, I was like, oh, it's probably just going to be Spore with, like, scary creatures. But no, it's not. It's not at all. So if you're thinking that, deal. Yeah.
Yeah. These guys have, I mean, we've been working on the game, you know, really making sure that that feels just right. And so we play it on, you know, we have weekly team plays because it is co-op. So you have to kind of get the whole studio together to kind of play and mash on the servers and everything like that. But but that's where our focus is and kind of, you know, bringing to it things like the co-op play, bringing to it, you know, really customization that you've never had in a game, you know, an action RPG kind of game because of the editor and everything. Yeah. So it's kind of takes a different twist.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely looks super cool. So why don't you just talk about a little bit about how you got into the industry and kind of your career path?
Well, seeing as I date back a ways and everything, I mean, this industry is still something that one of the funnest things about it is it constantly is changing.
Mm-hmm.
So it still has these, you know, really wonderful ways of you finding new things to do in it. And it's inventive, collaborative, creative. And it's got the tech side of it. So you have to really understand that technology, how to take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Every single cycle, you come up with new challenges with games and how you're going to build them. But it means that you can kind of come in and really find new jobs, find different ways to, you know, teams have kind of taken on an entirely different context from when I started in the game industry to now.
Yeah.
And I think that's fascinating, especially now that a lot of the university programs, which, you know, we have a bunch of graduates from CMU, USC, that type of thing that have come up with actual graduate degrees in interactive media. That wasn't around when I started. But I love that, you know, the smaller games that you can launch, the larger games that really are quite sophisticated and everything in terms of what they're doing. And, you know, so for me, it's just, it's like the funnest job I could imagine.
Cool.
You know, because it's got that creative side, it's got story side, it's got tech challenges, and you're always getting that feedback directly from your customer relatively quickly.
Right. Yeah. So, oh, I'm sorry.
I just had a quick question because you mentioned story in Darkspore and, and story again. And when you do that, because it's, you know, games used to be a lot more simple and now they're getting more like story involved and you said action RPG, do you do the writing in-house? Do you do freelancers? Like that part seems interesting because it seems like in the past 10 years, story suddenly super matters for like Maxis and BioWare and other companies. How does that work?
You know, I think when you bring story in at the very beginning, it works out the best. We've done some stuff with freelance, and I'm more happy when we really think about writing from the ground up because the game just becomes more organically wrapped around that. We've been lucky enough, you know, with our BioWare, you know, group,
right.
We were able to transfer one of the writers who had been on Mass Effect, and
he
started with us and brought a lot of just energy and context and just sort of this rich backstory that we could draw upon. And it really did influence the game design.
Yeah.
So Malcolm has been working with us. He's still in Canada, but he actually kind of, he'll come out, you know, every so often, but that's the other thing.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to kind of work remotely these days. So I really look at story as something that you kind of want to build from the ground up.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
You know, and that actually, we put that in the hopper along with the concept art phase.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you're really kind of thinking through what's the game going to look like, what's the backstory, you want to try to marry those two elements up nicely. So we've got Luke Harrington. In fact, he'll be down at Comic-Con with a group that's actually talking about the game. We're going to be showing a little bit more detail around it. Some of the team members themselves, Thomas Vu, Lauren McHugh, who's one of the lead engineers on the project, Luke Harrington talking about sort of how we got to where we are.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So was Lucas your first job in the industry?
I worked at, you know, the very, you know, back end of Activision. Then I went Lucas. And Lucas was super fun. It was the time when, you know, we were doing some of the story adventures. We went into doing some of the Star Wars games with Larry Holland. And it was just, you know, I got to go to ILM and watch the dailies for the movies that they were making. So it was kind of one of those really, you know, fun jobs to have with just, you know, Tim Schafer was there, Dave Grossman, Ron Gilbert. So a lot of very, you know, creative people. And they've kind of gone off and done their own things.
Yeah.
I'm now at Electronic Arts. And when Maxis was acquired, that was my, I was like, you know, that's the that's the job I want. Because SimCity is the first game I played all night long. You know, it kind of got me into gaming and everything.
Yeah, and so you came on at SimCity 3000, is that correct?
Yep. Yeah, worked on that, the original Sims. And, you know, as Maxis, we've kind of got simulation in our blood. So while we're doing, you know, Darkspore, you know, I think one of my guys put it this way. He goes, you know, sometimes you want pizza, sometimes you want spicy Thai.
Yeah.
So Maxis is still going to definitely be working in the simulation sphere.
Right.
I think Darkspore is one, you know, something that stemmed not only from that inspiration of the creature editor, but also the passion of the team that we had built around it.
Right.
You know, guys like Paul Sadasante, who we pulled in from Magic the Gathering and, you know, just has stat chops, you know, out there.
Awesome. So I'm going to ask you a question I'm sure you've probably been asked 2 million times. So what was it like working with Will Wright?
Oh, my gosh. Will is jaw-droppingly, you know, brilliant. And he's always the guy in the room who's going to ask the question that comes so far out of, you know, left field, but is so provocative in terms of how he thinks about something.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, and he's just, he's entertaining. And I love watching him work because he takes something, he disassembles it, and then finds the fun parts and how you're going to be able to kind of engage with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he just has this magic way of thinking about something that is this very tinkering, kind of build it from scratch way of going about something. And I think as a person who's managed to bring innovations to our industry and now with his own company, Stupid Fun Club, is working on even sort of making that impact in different forms of media and everything. So we still have a really, you know, sort of great relationship in terms of, you know, interacting, and Electronic Arts is invested in his company. And
right,
I'm so happy to see him be able to kind of take that very strong creative energy and apply it to different things as well. So.
Yeah, it was a great, when I was working back at Game Now back in the day, this was, I think it was the Making Magic Sims expansion pack. Will actually came along with the PR people when they gave us a demo, and nobody knew he was coming. And so everybody walked into the conference room and was like,
whoa.
Did a double take, you know? And the funny thing that I remember about it is he gave all of us some type of foreign currency so that he was buying off the journalists. It was so hilarious. And I still have that foreign currency.
So he's always done that. He's bought stuff off of eBay. I still have. Yeah. I have lots of different foreign currencies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and it's. I think there's still, and something that I'm really proud of is I think Maxis has a culture that sort of just having fun still very much exists in the studio at Maxis. And I think, you know, it's one thing I do appreciate about Electronic Arts. They've acquired a number of different, you know, companies over the course of time. But if you go to each one of the different studios, they really do retain their own culture. So you visit Maxis, you get a really different feel. We make a different kind of game. You go to BioWare, you've got their culture. And I think, to me, that helps with the diversity of games and sort of points of view. Mm-hmm. And I love that about, you know, sort of making games. I like seeing what other people come up with, and, you know, just because they'll approach it differently.
Right.
Meanwhile, we get to kind of share some of those chops with one another. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That actually leads into another question we got, since you're talking about it. Kind of on the flip side of that, are there any challenges that come into being part of a huge company like Electronic Arts? Like, do you have problems with approvals, or does everything have to go through the marketing department first, or, you know?
Corporate culture.
You know, anytime you have a large organization, there's definitely things that you're working on that, you know, okay, we're going to have different kinds of input and, you know, different kind of processes and systems. Nevertheless, a lot and very, you know, this is really John Riccitiello is, he's a gamer at heart.
Yeah.
And he sort of wants teams to make their decisions and make sure that he's pushing decision making into, you know, the groups who are going to be, you know, touching those games. That's why when we work with marketing, they're embedded in the studio. When we work with PR, they're working directly with us. Mm-hmm. So you don't feel as if you're working with somebody who's now just been assigned to your project. We work with people who are playing our game. They're in there through the development phases.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of rethinking it as, you know, we announce it, you know, and go, wow, what did people respond to? How are we going to, you know, kind of where, what direction will we take next? So I'd say it's a really collaborative kind of company.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think if you work in a smaller studio, it's and more entrepreneurial, it's a different kind of, you know, set of challenges. And yet both are really kind of interesting.
Yeah.
When you work at EA, I'll say this much. When you have your game out the door, you have really honed what, you know, what it is, because you really do have a lot of very experienced eyeballs on it.
Right. So kind of relating to that a little bit, you know, Maxis has obviously sold tons and tons of PC games. So do the team members feel kind of pressure to kind of keep outdoing themselves, or at least living up to this, you know, I mean, with The Sims selling millions and millions of copies, like, does that factor in at all? Or
I think anybody who's worked on a sequel feels that pressure of, you know, if it was successful, of really kind of making sure that you're doing that balancing act of not making it so that people can't enter into it and play it and have a really good time, but also giving something new, a new experience, to those people who have been, you know, playing it before.
Right.
So I think anytime you confront something like that, you're always kind of figuring that out. I think with simulation, just specifically Maxis's sort of forte and one of the things that's in our blood, you really are thinking about ways to kind of really think it through differently.
Uh-huh.
With PC gaming, one of the things I like about it is that it really has gone out into different kind of experiences. So with the Flash games, with, you know, bigger, broader, more social games, just being on the internet has kind of really influenced our design thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So we do think a lot more socially about what we're trying to do and everything. And if you look at The Sims, integrating the exchange directly right into the game, making it so it hot loads, you don't have to sit there and figure out what the bloody directory, you know, needs to have this particular, you know, hairstyle in order to see it or anything like that. It's just so seamless.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you're sitting here with all this great fan art. I mean, the UGC that's been made for The Sims over time has just been astounding. And the fact that, you know, players like to share that and they take a role in that because they have their own websites and put it out there. I think if we took that away from them, that would be a bad thing. But the fact that, you know, they can still participate,
it's
a pretty cool thing.
Yeah. So what was kind of the nexus of that idea to have the community kind of come in and do their own thing?
Gosh, I mean, dates way back to even the original SimCity. Do you remember? There's a tool called Skirk, SimCity Urban Renewal Kit. And this is like, this practically predates even some of, you know, the internet being as big as it was. But we would even have kids who were making their own buildings and everything for SimCity way back. I remember when I first started at Maxis, I wanted, you know, I'm sitting there working on SimCity. I wanted to get a fan's point of view. And we called up three webmasters who were making buildings using Skirt. Uh-huh. One of them happened to be this kid. He was 15 years old, Ren Weberg. We brought him to the studio. We interviewed him. We really got their opinions on it and everything. And, you know, had dinner, had a lot of conversation. They were there for a few days and everything like that. And off they went. You know. Ren ended up going to college and everything like that, and we ultimately hired him. He still works.
Oh, wow.
Great story. He still works with us, and he's great. I mean, he's continued to sort of evolve and add to his skill set in terms of online web, you know, interfaces and everything. So he builds a lot of the website backends and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Very, very cool.
I mean, it's like funky little stories like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, people find their way into this industry in some of the strangest ways.
I think gaming kind of, it inspires a lot of kids. And I think that's the other thing is, you know, part of the impetus around doing things like that. You know, Will had an idea that players telling their own stories would be a really cool thing. Mm-hmm. And then you get into the modding.
Right.
And I'm just, you know, it's always amazing how kids can just really be inventive in that space. I think Galactic Adventures on Spore, which allows you to make your own adventures using all the content that everybody... you know, that's made Spore content.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun. They can kind of really, you know, set their scene and the acts and everything the way that they want to and create these adventures. And we're finding kids who are really learning game design by experimenting with it.
Wow. Oh, wow. That's really cool. So our last guest that we had here was Brenda Brathwaite. Uh-huh. And she said when she started in the industry, there were like five women and they all knew each other. So do you have a similar type of experience?
You definitely kind of stand out in a room. I remember early on at GDC's, I remember going out to a restaurant down in San Jose, and the only other women in the entire establishment were the wait staff.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of freaky because it's just not that way in real life. So you kind of do end up, man, and it's definitely evolved. I think there are absolutely more women, and, you know, like Brenda, and who's driving projects and really bringing story to it. I mean, she did a brilliant job. You know, Jade Raymond, Virginia MacArthur, who's over at Zynga and has really made Zynga.org, you know, a passion of hers, which is to get, you know, sort of philanthropy built into the system and everything while she's actually producing things like Yeovil and everything. So I love the fact that there's more roles. There's stronger women who have roles not only in development, but in other ways that are kind of influencing our industry. So
cool.
That's such a great, you know, sort of, you know, transition that's been taking place. But it was a while there. I mean, I'd still say, you know, if you go to GDC today, still you're going to definitely be outnumbered. But, you know, in terms of gender balance and everything, but it's definitely starting to change up. And, you know, bringing new women into the industry, getting, you know, the word out there, getting those intern programs, working through those the university programs that are about interactive media. These small collaborative teams that work in those groups just turn out some amazingly brilliant, you know, contributors, and we've been fortunate enough to have a lot of them work with us as interns and hire them. That's where Lauren McHugh came from, and she's building up the AI ability system for our game Darkspore. So
Did you ever feel like there was a little bit of like a wall that you ever hit? Like you get the feeling that some people maybe dismissed your ideas and you had to prove yourself harder? Or was it kind of like they were just really cool about it from the start, the guys?
You know, I think that's another reason why the gaming industry is kind of fun. It's sort of built around a lot of collaboration. You have to have all these varied disciplines. You've got artists, you've got engineers, you've got sound people. So no matter what, you have to hear these voices. Otherwise, you're not going to end up with the best possible game.
Right.
And I think because it was born from that sort of creative, you know, sort of wellspring, I've never felt that it's been that big of a problem. That said, you know, I do think there's a huge disparity in terms of women in behind the scenes, and you know, we're still in the 80-20 probably for the overall industry, and that's the case, I think, not just in the gaming industry but in industry in general. So frankly, you know, women are coming out of universities with higher grades and, you know, better, you know, background, and can really contribute in so many different ways. So kind of let's shake that up a little bit. We need to mix up the boardrooms, and we need to get, you know, women in greater leadership positions. I'm glad to say that I think Electronic Arts is moving in that direction, and I think our industry is moving in that direction, but yeah, we're behind. Let's step on it.
So what kind of advice would you give to a young girl who wants to get into the industry?
Wow. One, be curious. Two, listen. Three, experiment. I think there are so many tools today that you can learn and you can kind of script and come up with your own games, whether it be in Flash or card games. Mm-hmm. If you want to be in the gaming industry, play games, experiment with it, you know, try a diverse pool of games, mm-hmm. and then try out your own ideas. Mm-hmm. Figure out where it is that you find your own passion. Is it, you know, underlying code? I mean, that logic system, is mm-hmm. it going to be in the art? Is it going to be in how the user interface? Mm-hmm. We brought in a lot of people who came from kind of that web background because you wanted people to really kind of get it instantly and figuring mm-hmm. out how a user interface is going to work when somebody else is working with it instead of somebody who's built the game. So mm-hmm. right. I think it's find your passion because there's some really, really amazingly interesting jobs in the gaming industry these days.
Cool. All right. Let's go to some more reader questions. Well, this is one we talked about before we got started here. We got like three questions. Are we ever going to see another SimCity?
Well, we're not announcing anything today. I will say this much, though. Maxis is never going to walk away from simulation. We have mm-hmm. it in our blood. And I think that I work with some people who are just amazing minds in that regard. We've brought new levels of simulation in the Sims division to The Sims. Mm-hmm. That whole neighborhood sim is, it's amazing, you know, how that was built and thought through and worked out and everything. And so I just find that interesting. Mm-hmm. I know that I work with people who find that interesting. And, you know, as we kind of continue to evolve what we're working on next, I think that those kind of games will be coming up and coming from my own team in terms of the stuff that they want to work on. So
yeah, cool.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
There you have it, kiddies.
Okay. Next question comes from Steven. Steven says, Sims 3 allows for same-sex marriage. Was this a conscious decision? And did you guys experience any backlash by the community or internally?
You know, not only Sims 3 allowed that, but same-sex relationships has always been a part of The Sims. Yeah. And our attitude toward The Sims was this. One, we think that that's a viable area of exploration. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you decide to pursue. As you have control, you're the gamer. It is not something that we push upon the gamer, nor do we treat dismissively. Mm-hmm. And I think because we really thought through and had that balance. And, you know, frankly, I worked with a number of people who were gay and were lesbians, mm-hmm. and we had that influence and behind the scenes in terms yeah. of what we wanted to bring forward. Yeah, we definitely saw some people write that up, some favorably, some unfavorably. Mm-hmm. But I think it was an attitude that we had that it was part of life. This is a game about play with life, mm-hmm. and that's something that we wanted people to be able to pursue. Same thing we had to make decisions on in The Sims was, it was a game that was for teens, mm-hmm. and we did not want to we actually made very clear decisions about even, you know, our silly comic humor in terms of fights and everything, which right. is, again, part of the drama of life. You want yeah. conflict. Right. We didn't let adult Sims fight in front of, you know, the kid Sims when we introduced yeah. kids and stuff like that. I mean, so there were things that we had to sort of play with and understand exactly what the boundaries were going to be. And I like that about The Sims. I think our brand values internally to, you know, the people building it are very clear in terms of the game that's been produced.
Yeah. I love The Sims. It was like one of the sort of gateway type games for me. And I remember you were talking about the fighting. There's one time I was just being mean to somebody just for the heck of it, just to see what would happen. And I remember being so surprised when the person just slapped me. And I was like, wow. That
it's
is really
just
funny.
Like real life.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do to you later.
Yeah. 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 It was really cool. So speaking of gateway games, like The Sims is probably looked at as kind of the first game that really captured a female audience, mm-hmm. Or majority female audience.
Yeah, definitely.
So why do you think that is?
I think there's a bunch of different elements. I think, first of all, those kind of open sandbox games mm-hmm. that allow players to kind of decide how they want to navigate it and mm-hmm. that allow you to kind of explore the design space. I also think that having an approach which allows for silly failure states as well as success
right.
makes that kind of exploration really fun. I think that it, because it was a game that didn't necessarily say, here, you need to play it this way, mm-hmm. sort of already spoke to a broader audience. I think because it was about people, mm-hmm. Made it something that people could just sort of relate to. And the fact that you could design your own sim. I watched right. kids play, and it was one of the things that really, you know, had a lot of impact to how we continued to evolve The Sims and the look of The Sims. and allow for all that user-generated content to come right into the game and everything was kids make their own families. Mm-hmm. And then they experiment and put people in the most, you know, awful predicaments, you know. My dad's going to go do this. And my, you know, my sister's going to be in this situation. Of course, she's going to fail school and have a bad boyfriend and all these kind of things. So I think that that made for a game that allowed, you know, not just the experimenter or the builder or, you know, somebody who wanted to play it to beat the simulation. Mm-hmm. It kind of was a little bit more inviting. And I think that, I think now, you know, we have gamers coming in and I listen to, you know, women who really kind of can rock the socks off me in terms of, you know, really gaming some of the Call of Duties or the shooters and everything like that. But you just didn't see that back, you know, too long ago. And I think as people, you know, are growing up with computers, growing up with gaming systems in their, you know, living rooms and everything like that, we have a much more diverse audience. I think we are kind of beholden to make a little bit more diverse games. And that's why another reason I think just having different perspectives behind the scenes is going to lend to that. Right. I don't think painting anything pink and calling it a girl game is going to make, you know, hey, wow, success in this field or anything. I think it's just satisfying different motivations.
Yeah.
You know? So I like games that kind of mix it up a little bit in terms of how you get to play them. And, you know, okay, if I want to play it this way, I can do that. I think mods, you know, the fact that a lot of games really invest in how you can modify the game landscape and everything and kind of introduce new ideas and everything into it. They show off a lot of what, you know, gamers want to do. So that's kind of a fun new aspect of just seeing where they take things.
Yeah, I think the first lesson I learned in The Sims was not to let anybody cook if they didn't have any cooking skill.
Did they set the kitchen on fire?
They would set the kitchen on fire.
Oh, yeah. I love, you know, still to this day, experimenting with, you know, those, you know, terrible outcomes. I mean, I think everybody does it, which is great. You know, why not? Let that happen. I think that's just hysterical. I also think my favorite character in The Sims, the, you know, I know you make your own characters, but still my favorite character in the entire Sims line is the Grim Reaper.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I think he's the probably the backbone of the entire game. I mean, yeah. I love Rochambeauing with him in terms of trying to save your sim from death. I love the fact that he'll, you know, dial up on his cell phone and make that call.
Yeah, I know. The first time he showed up, I was like, my sim was sick and I like couldn't figure out how to get her better. And then the Grim Reaper shows up and I was like, no, no.
Yes. It is time.
That's, I mean, when we introduced death into The Sims, I remember that as sort of one of those moments where a big light bulb went off over my head because we had already been interacting on Slashdot and stuff with, you know, a fan base. We even did, while we were in development, we did web sort of pictures, web snapshots, as we would actually have a little, you know, sort of chat interview and everything. But it was that day where all of a sudden their Sims were dying and they were like writing like crazy on the bulletin boards and everything like, how do I bring my Sim back? And I think that sort of open relationship with a community of fans is something that's continued to be one of those main influences of Maxis. Like we want to make sure that we have kind of that open dialogue. Mm-hmm. When we announced Darkspore, we already opened up, you know, a forum. We're getting feedback, questions, you know, because it's definitely a different direction.
Yeah.
You know, are we going to be able to make content? What are we going to be able to do? So we've, you know, head over to darkspore.com and you're going to see that, you know, there's a lot of forum questions, a lot of answers there that we're kind of having our team just kind of give answers to. So you kind of have that direct contact with people.
Cool. We got a question here from Jamie. She wants to know if you are going to ever make another Sim MMO. So I hate to bring up The Sims Online, but I mean, I think everybody thought it was going to be like, oh my God, The Sims is perfect for an MMO, and it didn't quite work.
It's kind of interesting because the stuff that was part of the system for The Sims was really almost what became social networks today. I mean, it basically had a friendship web.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of funny that these were the elements of what, you know, came into The Sims Online and stuff like that. So I think it had really, you know, strong ideas in terms of where people were going in terms of interacting.
Right.
I can't tell, you know, whether we're going to be working ever again in that space with The Sims specifically. But I do think that social gaming and how you sort of incorporate that into the design, not necessarily just the Facebook games that are out there today. There's a there's this adorable little game that was made by Area Code, and it's out there. It's called Power Planets. And one of the things, you nurture a planet, and you decide which resources you're going to use. And then every so often, they randomly spin the planets and you'll end up with one of your friend's planets. And maybe they were raping and pillaging the land and just using up all the resources and everything. And you're like, dang, you know, that's, you know, you were horrible. But it's funny how, one, it changes your relationship with your friends or it makes you think about what they've done. Mm-hmm. You can just be kind of mad like that and kind of, you know, set it up so somebody's going to get your, you know, horribly misused planet, or you can make it something that you've nurtured and somebody now gets this little beautiful gem and everything. I think those kind of influences are starting to spring up in more and more games today. Yeah. And not just multiplayer, because I really think multiplayer is a different kind of exercise from the design. Social.
Right.
It's kind of cool. Honestly, I play words with friends all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too.
My Scrabble obsession.
Yeah. So on Facebook game, like, do you play Facebook games? Are there any that you like?
Well, I mean, so I have to say I definitely dabble. I've been playing My Empires, which is kind of fun. Uh-huh. I like Hotel City. Both of those are Playfish games.
Yeah.
I've, you know, toyed around with stuff. I don't find that they capture my attention too dramatically for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. I can see why they do. Mm-hmm. I tend to like the ones that have a little bit more involvement. So I think Power Planets, for me, there's a little bit more underlying it with sort of this kind of, you kind of realize some different things in that way. So I tend to veer a little bit more towards those. I mean, the XBL stuff, some of the games that have come out there. Recently, you know, our Hasbro group, Chip Lang's team, they did Risk Factions. Mm-hmm. And they kind of really took a different spin on it. And it's really a blast to play. So I was a board gamer. I like those kind of games and stuff. And now I think, you know, the social landscape and that kind of thing has really kind of brought those back in a different way. Almost, you know, that sort of still that asynchronous play, but lots more social tendrils that kind of hook you up together and everything and make kind of impact to your choices. So those are the style of online games that I like to play.
Cool.
I still will, you know, SimCity, Civ, and I am still an RTS geek. So I, even though I've drifted away from that a little bit, but it's
So you excited for StarCraft 2 then?
Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. I was going to ask what you were looking, obviously, besides your own work. I hope so, at least. What else are you looking forward to this year? You're like Civ 5 or something like that?
I do. I mean, I watched that one. I think they're going to take that in an interesting direction. We worked with Soren Johnson on Spore, you know, so he's no longer working on Civ or anything, but he and I shared a lot of sort of design, you know, conundrums and background, having worked on both SimCity and Civilization and stuff. I like to just see it just to see where people take their designs and everything. Yeah. So I look forward to those. You know, I have to admit that right now, a lot of my gaming time is preoccupied playing my own game, Dark
Souls.
Right,
yeah.
So, and we're really working. And I mean, it's so fun making a game that has such strong co-op because during tuning and everything, you really do get to play it. Now, granted, you are working on the tuning and everything, so you're kind of stopping and analyzing and taking all the telemetry that helps you tune it along the way. But it's really fun to play during development.
Yeah.
Instead of that thing where you have to play through all by yourself to a certain point and everything.
Right. So. Yeah. So we got a question here from David Kirby, Lieutenant Kirby. He's one of our biggest fans. He writes in all the time. So his question is, out of all of the games that you've been involved in, which is your favorite?
Oh, wow. Well, okay. So SimCity is always going to be there because that was, I love playing it. I love thinking it through. I can't help but, you know, look at cities differently. I'm probably one of the few game designers who will sit there and talk to you about different urban planning, you know, philosophies, you know, sticks and lollipops as an urban, you know, sort of suburban layout of streets and roads, which ultimately didn't work because it didn't allow people to really create neighborhoods. It was great for quiet, but it didn't create that sort of connective tissue in neighborhoods and that kind of thing. Weird facts like that I've but that have always influenced sort of how I think about games and systems and everything. And so that's always going to be one. I think the other one that really stands out for me is working on, with the team that worked on The Secret of Monkey Island 2. Tim Schafer.
That's one of Christine's favorite games.
And it's just come out on the iPhone and stuff too. Yeah. So, and you know, they were influenced from Mania Mansion. Just funny people. And it was just a blast working there with them on that project and stuff. So I think it's as much the people as it is the game that you're working on. Yeah. And, you know, those are the kind of, you kind of push through these, you know, challenging moments on games. And then you really kind of, it's like, wow, I just learned so much from that experience.
Yeah.
So yeah. Both of those stand out for me as kind of these moments in my career that were like, I just felt like I was getting so much out of it myself. And I felt like, gosh, I really have a lot to give to this too.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So, I have to cover Facebook games. Well, I should say I have to. I do enjoy some of them for my job here. And one thing that I have noticed is, well, you know, they kind of borrow from each other. Mm-hmm. But another thing that I've noticed is there is so much inspiration in so many of them from Maxis games.
Sim
like
games, yeah.
You have Social City, which is very obviously inspired by SimCity. You know, just the, what was it? Playdom just released another one. I think it's called Fanglies, where it's kind of Sims-ish, but they're the little creature things, you know?
Yep.
And they get sad and you have to make them happy, you know? And so.
You know, just the idea of moods.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Uh-huh. So like, how does that make you feel when you see so many other games kind of taking little bitty pieces of what you guys have brought?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it's kind of natural. I think these kind of influences are unnatural. I mean, we were influenced by board games.
Right.
We were you know, mugs and stuff like that. So we were definitely leveraging those. I mean, do you remember, I even went back and played the old Informix games, you know, Zorg and stuff like that.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Zork. And I was just, it's funny how there are influences into today's games from that, you know, spate. And so I think it's kind of a natural tendency.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that people are always bringing something kind of new to things.
Mm-hmm.
We've been influenced by a number of games as we're working on Darkspore, and it's how we're sort of bringing in new innovations that I think continue to make those genres even more interesting to play.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about what's your focus. What is it that you're really, really going to focus, you know, on and make sure that you polish that? That's being even more appreciated today than I think ever before,
mm-hmm.
which I think makes the game designer's job really a tough one, because
yeah.
it's not about how wide you can make it. It's about how great you can make the experience that you're making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I tell you, trimming in design, scoping something is way the heck harder than, you know, continuing to add more.
Right.
It really,
yeah.
really is, because you have to give up some, you know, of your little babies as you're trying to think of what is it that I'm going to actually focus on. I think as far as the Sims and, you know, sim game influence in games and everything, I actually like to see it. I think what I would like to see more of is the simulation aspect kind of coming up, mm-hmm. in some of those Facebook games. I think,
yeah.
getting that choice, the repercussions, the, you know, there's a cost benefit of certain things.
Uh-huh.
And you don't see a lot of that yet in some of those, because it really is more of a build kind of thing.
Right.
I think games that show failure states are, you know, all of a sudden you realize it's this magic little thing that you're balancing.
Yeah.
And that's the magic of a sim game to me. So while I think some of the Facebook games have kind of been inspired by,
yes.
sim games, I don't think they quite touch upon that little dynamic that was the magic underlying some of those.
Yeah. Okay.
And back to Sim-Ann, I mean.
Right, yeah. okay, so let's see. We have one more question here. This comes from Mohammed. He just wants to know, like, in your career, you know, were there ever times where you didn't get along with team members or, you know?
You know, working in a large collaborative group, and they're larger and everything, it is just like being in a family. There are absolutely dysfunctional moments. There are absolutely, you get to know people really well because we work long hours.
Right.
And yet a lot of it is just like a family. You figure out, you know, how to kind of keep a relationship, have different opinions, agree, you know, to disagree and kind of move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best teams are those teams that can sort of bring their best, you know, allow and hear, you know, other people's opinions that sit on the team, that what they can bring to influence what you're doing and move forward in a direction that, you know, really does end up with a great game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you strive for, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, having worked with Will, it's one of the things that I think he was an absolute master of. His ability to allow collaboration, even in the design and everything, and have a very clear vision,
mm-hmm.
of what it was that he wanted and was core to the game system, and yet, you know, allow those kind of influences in. led to some of the greatest successes that he had in his career. Influences on The Sims from, you know, Roxy and Claire and Kana that really kind of made the whole family aspect of The Sims come to life and everything. So that's the kind of team dynamic that you hope, you know, to get. Sometimes it's a struggle. But, you know, I think that's kind of natural. It's human nature.
Yeah. You want to share an example? No names.
Oh, gosh.
Just,
I couldn't.
Just
I...
give us a good fight.
It is girl fight after all. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of any one thing that we just had, you know, recently, any kind of real, you know, strongly passionate discussion on. I mean, there's probably the famous one of cute versus science and sport and everything. And the influences that led us down the path that, that we, you know, ended up. It wasn't a fight, but it was definitely differences of opinion. And I think why we landed where we were is, one, to engage people, to allow people to be more creative in the editors themselves. Because the more you said, this has to act just like, you know, a cat or whatever, the more precise it got, the harder it became. And we did want to make sure that people could, you know, come in and explore and be creative. So that real balance between creativity and precision of a simulation and everything was some of the balancing act that we continually had to kind of discuss and talk about. When we had physics working with the creature editor, it was so easy to make something that just couldn't walk. And just, you know, you get it out of the editor and just got to flop down on the ground. And it was, it became so hard to make something that was successful that it was clearly, you know, we had to kind of back off some of that.
Yeah.
Although there was a very cool creature that was made by Jordan Maynard, Dave Maynard's son, by the way. He made an intestosaur. And it was when physics really worked in the game, and it was this long thing. It was all looped around, and we called it the intestosaur because it looked like an intestine. And then as it walked, this whole loop would roll out.
Oh, wow.
And then it rolled back up.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That is so cool.
It's something that, you know, as, you know, game developers, we still want to explore some of that space and see if we'd ever bring that in a game or anything like that. But it's one of those things that at the time, in order to make it something that players could actually use, we left on the cutting room floor. We'll return to.
One of the most fun things I had playing Spore was seeing what the creature would look like when it walked or, you know, doing the other things, because I was delighted to find some of them were really amusing in ways I hadn't expected.
It was amazing just seeing how, you know, the sort of creator community would come up with ways to sort of trick the editor into doing things like putting mouths that they embedded in things, and all of a sudden you'd get an entirely different look to stuff. So it blew our minds when we originally released that.
Yeah.
We were just kind of like, I still to this day, there's stuff on our, you know, Sporepedia at spore.com that are just astounding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really tricky how they kind of configured everything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they learned how the animation system worked.
Wow. Yeah. So is Maxis going to stay on PC for the most part? You guys have any interest in developing for the consoles?
We're very PC focused right now. Darkspore is PC focused. We've got, you know, that kind of legacy. We have, you know, other things in the works that are going to, you know, iPhone, iPad, these types of different platforms that have kind of opened up and kind of our natural inclination for us. I wouldn't say that we'd never go to console, but right now that's the space that we're operating in.
All right, cool.
And I think the PC is still a very, very viable gaming system and everything. I think a lot of people are out there gaming on it.
Yeah.
I think it's changing a little bit because living room gaming is really compelling now. You've got the online, you know, factors and stuff like that there. But I do still think that because a lot of gamers get their information right there on their PC, I think because now we're making simultaneous Mac games, you know, and stuff like that. I think there's sort of a natural tendency for people to kind of explore different games and find kind of hints at different games right there on their computer. So
yeah,
I think it'll stick around.
Alrighty, cool. So what are your thoughts on the California law that is at the Supreme Court?
You know, I really do think that it's kind of reactive, and, you know, it's one of those things that I think isn't going to be good for any medium that, you know, works in terms of the creative sphere. And I think that that's something that, you know, as a country, we've really been adamant about. You can express yourself. We have rating systems that are intended to clarify that. And we've done that in music. We've done that in, you know, art. We've done that in magazine publications. I think that's the appropriate approach. And I, you know, so it's one of these things that kind of boils up because it becomes a hot button. And I think we really need to return to what's, you know, the core argument there. So,
okay. Cool. Do you guys have any other questions?
What sort of games do you like to play outside of like simulation or that?
Well, simulation art. I get in these cycles, and we're in a cycle right now where I'm playing a lot of my own games. So I do like the action RPG. I was, you know, playing around with Torchlight. Those guys did a brilliant job. Despanx, as I said, which is another kind of, it's a sort of weird mashup between that old Lucas story adventure and and light RPG like action and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Puzzle Quest on the DS. I was a big, so when I was, you know, I have two teenage daughters now, but when I was, you know, heavy up in, you know, when they were a little bit younger, I was a soccer mom. And so I always had my DS with me. So I did a lot of DS gaming. Professor Layton.
Oh, yeah.
And that was fun because all the girls and I, we would each one of us could solve different puzzles. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of fun. Scribblenauts, just to explore. Mm-hmm. I mean, those fun, you know, I have to admit to dabbling more than playing straight through these days. So I don't think I ever finish a game.
Lots of us don't finish them either. Yeah. So.
I managed, you know, of late, I have managed to finish some books, and I feel like that's a huge accomplishment because I usually have about 14 on my bedside table, and you know, but I just read through the whole Stieg Larsson, you know, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series, which are tomes.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I feel like that was an amazing accomplishment in my life just recently.
Any work-related reading or like things about video games and whatnot?
Oh, I think I constantly am in a lot of user interface design, you know, that kind of thing. Just, you know, gaming design. We have some really interesting designers, Stone LeBrand and Paul Sadasante, who both came from card gaming backgrounds, and they do a lot of teaching. So if you ever catch them, they're at GDC. Often they'll give a lecture, but you know, those kind of influences. So that type of reading, definitely. The other stuff, you know, which is a little bit more, you know, Malcolm Gladwell. I love his books, Blink and Tipping Point, and you know, those. It's just that sort of those memes and the things that, you know, the sort of way our culture and sort of society kind of drive things forward. And I still kind of keep abreast of urban planning books. I, you know, it's like, don't, you know. When I worked with Will, he had all space books and everything like that.
Wow.
You know, he was so happy that he could, you know, send me his, you know, cast off urban planning books so that he could have more space in his bookshelf.
Have you ever read any of little novellas like based on video games? Is that something you'd ever want to do at Maxis where you like, you'll come up with something more story-based like Darkspore and be like, ooh, we should turn this into a novella.
Yeah, we should turn this into, you know, some of the graphic novels and everything. Well, I do love graphic novels. Bone, one of the ones I've read. And I think that's the space I'd like to explore a little bit more. I think comic books, I haven't read a lot of the ones that have been based on some of the games. I actually like the ones that players have been making. I don't know if you've seen some of those mashups on like, what's the Mash On? You can take game art and make your own comics.
Oh, yes.
Like
I know what you're talking about now, yeah.
So I think those are kind of fun to see. And I think there's some really amazing writers out there doing stuff and kind of mashing up. And there's been this sort of new influence of people mashing up different types of games along with different art and everything. So that's, you know, there's kind of, I'd have to look at some of the links that I've kind of encountered lately that people have been doing that with. But I think we've got a lot of really amazing kind of artists out there who have been given tools that they can finally do some of this stuff with.
Super Mario, Metal.
Penny Arcade. I mean, those guys are
They're great.
Hysterical. And so as a comic strip that I read a lot.
Do your girls ever influence your game design at all?
So my girls both play The Sims a ton, and they invite all their friends over. So I, you know, it's kind of cool being a mom who works in the video game industry and everything, because when I come on the, you know, their school and everything, I get asked for all the cheats.
Oh, right.
I'm kind of like, you know, I'm in or cool enough to kind of be introduced. And then when the you know, so I was known as the, you know, person who worked on The Sims and everything. When the boys found out that I worked on Spore and then later, you know, now Darkspore and everything, now I'm really cool. So, you know, the things that they've influenced, they often, I'll take things home and have them play it. I think all of us do that in the industry. We constantly are exposing our own poor family to these games that are halfway through development and everything.
And Crash. And yeah.
Oh, just pay no attention to that. The other thing I've done is I've brought their friends in, and we do focus groups. So I remember bringing in, you know, when Allie was, I think she was 13, she brought in 14 of her friends. And it was because they were all friends. It was not like a regular focus group where nobody knows. There was so much squealing and screaming in the room. I swear, I was like, ah. And we had this big glass room. So half of my team was kind of like going, whoa, what is going on in there? Well, that was with The Sims. And they had a lot of different things, you know, just things that they would stumble over or things that they thought, you know, didn't feel true and everything like that. So they have a lot of opinions.
I'm sure they do.
All right. So we know we've got Darkspore coming. Is that next year or 2012?
Yeah, early 2011. So we haven't nailed down a completely specific date right now.
So. Okay. So I mean, I know this is like total like fortune telling, but beyond that, what do you see in the future for Maxis?
Well, like I say, I think, you know, given that we're working through, you know, bringing on team members who have that sort of storytelling background, I think it's a mix of allowing us to kind of play to some of our strengths that we've had, that simulation, and building our studio still around that as a nice core, kind of, you know, different take on games, and thinking through how players get to tell their own stories, how players can create, you know, part of what it is, you know, have a role to play in that creation, and that. Now we're kind of influenced by what we've been building with Darkspore, that storytelling piece of things. So I think expect to see us to go and try to bring our unique background, which has a lot to do with community, a lot to do with user-generated, you know, content into different genres and not go too far or wide. I think we want to stay to some core competencies, but those are the two influences that are kind of influencing who we bring into Maxis and are thinking about what we're going to be doing next.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Did you guys have anything else that you wanted to ask?
Nope.
All right. Cool. Well, we're going to wrap it up then. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks to Lucy for coming and chatting with us. As always, you can send questions, comments, and feedback to IGNGirlFight@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/IGNGirlFights. And you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/IGNGirlFights. And we'll be back with a standard episode with just us IGN gals next week.
All right. Thanks
for having me, you guys.